Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, September 5th, 2017. With me today, Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm good, man. We just had a three-day weekend. It was a little extra time off, a little extra heat. It was good stuff.
Yeah, and it sounds like, because you're actually here speaking to me, you survived the insane California heat?
Mostly.
All right. Well, I'll take that over not at all. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm good. I had a restful weekend for a change.
I am so happy to hear that, because you need rest every now and then. It turns out, much to my surprise, you aren't actually superhuman.
Yeah, you get away from the computer, you get more exercise, you sleep better, sleep longer. You come back refreshed. It's nice.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad both of you are here. I'm also glad that our sponsor this week is care.com. They're the experts at getting you the in-home care you need for your family members. And yeah, so that's really cool. And we might as well just like jump into topics. And first up, we have the news that Apple Music Festival, which is about 10-day long music festival thing that Apple has been doing in London. So different concerts every single day. It's off. It ran for 10 years and they're now done. And Apple hasn't said why, but they have confirmed that yes, it's over. And I'm curious, what do you think about this? And Brian, I bet you have some thoughts.
Well, I do. It's interesting to me. I mean, it was such a glorious vanity piece, vanity project, you know? I mean, it's like you had a month of free concerts. Mm-hmm. And they were free to the peeps, but I believe the artists were getting paid.
Oh, I can't imagine they would do the shows without getting paid. I mean, even if they wanted to be altruistic about it, there's probably
no altruism. It's like a promotion. You know, you do the piece because it's a heck of a promotional vehicle for any band.
Yeah, but you know, when you're talking about people like Elton John, how much promotion does he really need?
Well, also does he? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, fair enough. Now, I believe that they were getting paid, and it was. Like it was such a big deal. It was such a feather in Apple's cap. It was a great way for them to not only maintain their relationships with artists, but to plaster their name over for Apple to plaster their name over this prestigious event. You remember it went from the iTunes Music Festival to the Apple Music Festival,
right?
And so, you know, Apple was promoting Apple Music through it too. And artists don't get paid.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So Apple was really, it's still going to be expensive even without that. I'm checking here. It's a good thing we do our research, right? Is this an episode of ACM?
I was about to ask, I was double checking which presets we have running right now.
Yeah, Apple kind of don't get paid. Artists come in. This is what Eddie Q said. The artists come in and they're not getting paid. They're here because they know that this is an opportunity for them to play for these fans. And in many cases, kind of go back to when they were starting out in a smaller venue. Get really close and personal. You've got this venue and that is truly historic and holds 2,500 people. So you're going to see these artists that always play in these much larger arenas, blah, blah, blah. So yeah. All right. I was thinking that there was something tickling in the back of my head. So still though, you know, it's renting out the roundhouse and, you know, doing all the wrangling and the filming. Cause you remember Apple broadcasts this stuff too.
Yeah. So you could watch it on Apple TV.
Yeah. And then eventually theoretically you would have been able to watch it on Apple Music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yes. Last year I believe it was linked through Apple Music too.
Yeah. So I find it curious that they would cancel this thing. It was such a big deal, and it represented so much. Is this another thing where Eddie Q is now so focused on making the music stuff happen, he just doesn't have time to deal with the stuff.
You know, I bet he's really good at delegating. So, and I'm assuming there was a team that took care of this, so it wasn't Eddie Q running around making deals come together.
Oh, I bet Eddie Q and maybe even eventually Jimmy Iovine were both making some deals happen, getting
some people on board.
Now, your theory is that Apple is just moving to standalone concert promotions.
Yeah, which they've already started doing, and they had a bigger presence at South by Southwest this year promoting concerts.
Yeah, it's not the same. The Apple Music Festival, aka the iTunes Music Festival, was a big deal. There is no single concert that is going to represent the kind of promotional vanity project that month-long event represented.
To be fair, I think the last couple years, at least, it's been 10 days as opposed to a month.
Oh.
Yeah. They scaled it back.
I wonder if they just decided it was too much money. Because again, I mean, even if they're not paying the artist, it's still a lot of money to be putting out. But a lot of man hours, because the stagehands are being paid, right?
Right.
The unions, whoever handles the logistics within London, those folks are getting paid. All of the Apple people needed to liaison with the artists and coordinate with the artists and organize the artists and make sure that the artists are on the stage when they're supposed to be, and you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those people had to be paid,
of course.
And security had to be paid. Cleanup had to be paid. So, I mean, for most companies, it would be a sizable investment to do that event every year. For Apple, you know, it's Apple has so much money.
So, John, you've been uncharacteristically quiet. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I am not an expert on these matters as you guys are, but putting two and two together, I have a couple of theories. Mm-hmm. One is that some of the more prestigious people who were invited to come got tired of not being paid and rabble-roused a little bit. And maybe some of the other people who would have joined them thought, well, Apple's making all this money, has all this money, and yet they're not paying us. And everything's going quite well with Apple. They should maybe pay us. Maybe that was a showstopper, just a theory.
Well, I like that idea, and I could also get behind the argument itself. I haven't heard anything to that effect, though.
Yeah, that would be very
harsh. We haven't had any grumblings, and you know, artists aren't typically ones to keep grumbling to themselves. But it is definitely an idea worth some merit, John.
And the other theory I had was that the scope of the event, the size and the length duration got out of sync with the security capabilities and the threat levels. And maybe there was a birdie whispering on their shoulders that, you know, London was not a great time to be doing something like this.
You know, it is possible that the iTunes Festival became a security target. Like that was, you know, like, at the national security level of either the folks in England or our folks here in the States.
Because it lasts so long, there's an opportunity, better opportunity because of the duration of the event. Those are my two theories, ignorant as I am.
Interesting two theories.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, regardless of why, Apple Music Festival is off. So if you were scheduling out time in September to hopefully go see some of the concerts, well, you've got that time back. Go do with it as you please.
Yeah. And of course, you know, tickets were given away for free through a lottery system. So, mm-hmm. You know, planning to go was kind of has always been kind of a hit or miss hodgepodge. But it's an interesting move that Apple would cancel such a big deal.
Yes, it is. Yep. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Care.com. And what Care.com does is take that burden off of you trying to figure out how to deal with and then make happen the in-home care that you may suddenly be burdened with or saddled with, or at least facing with family members. And as an example, I just recently ended up in a position where I am facing having to take on more in-home care type functions with some of my family members. And it's a kind of thing that just kind of hits you out of the blue, and you may not be ready for it. And that's where Care.com comes in. What they do is get all the resources together and then help you find what it is that you're going to need to help with this, with the in-home care that the loved ones in your life will need. So they take that burden off of you, and then you can focus on the things that are more important, you know, like actually spending time with the people that you love, as opposed to just focusing on taking care of them all the time. So it's a really great service worth checking out. And actually, here's an interesting thing that I learned as I've been doing this kind of research, because, well, it suddenly mattered to me in a big way. One of the things that I found out is that right now we're looking at a U.S. population that 13% of the current U.S. population is 65 or older, and the number of people that are going to fall into that age group is going to pretty much double by the time 2050 rolls around. So that means that what I'm looking at today is something that a lot more people are going to be looking at in the coming years. So getting your ducks in order now sounds like a really good idea to me, and Care.com can help you with that. So here's what you can do. Head over to their website, care.com, care.com/TDO. And when you go to that link specifically, you're going to be able to get 30% off your premium membership, which is a pretty sweet deal. So head over to their website, care.com/TDO, and check out their services. And when you sign up, if this is a service that you need for your family, you get 30% off that premium membership. So care.com/TDO. Thank you, care.com, for being our sponsor today. All right. So John, last week before the Labor Day holiday weekend, you, we're talking about the Touch Bar on the MacBook Pro, and I know this was inspired by a couple of articles that someone else wrote about the state of the Touch Bar. And what I'm curious about is what exactly is your take on the Touch Bar? Because it kind of sounds to me like you might be a little bit pessimistic about its future.
Well, I don't have a MacBook Pro with Touch Bar. I have a little 12-inch MacBook, which I dearly love. And also, as the listeners and readers may know, Particle Debris takes one highlight article a week, something that really I thought was impressive and wanted to say more about, the Particle Debris article of the week. And this was by former Apple employee and Apple author and luminary Chuck von Rosbach. Mm-hmm. And he did the most thorough analysis and observations of the Touch Bar that I had seen in the last year. And I thought it was a great pair of articles that explored the ins and outs, how he felt about the Touch Bar. Chuck bought a 2017 5K iMac. Mm-hmm. And of course, the keyboard does not have the Touch Bar. And remember when the Touch Bar first came out, we all thought, Oh, well, and that means Apple's going to build a new keyboard, and it's going to have a secure enclave inside, and it's going to be, it's going to have Touch ID, and it's going to communicate with an encrypted link back to the Mac. Are we, you know, we wondered how the
standalone keyboard.
Yeah. How we wondered how that was going to evolve. So Chuck goes into that. He went into his use of the Touch Bar, and he discovered using his iMac that he really didn't miss it the more and more he used his desktop. Mm-hmm. So, I started thinking about that in the context of the dark years of the Mac, 2015 and 2016, and commented that perhaps some executives thought that because if there was so much energy and excitement about the Touch Bar, that the Mac as a whole was being properly attended to, and we know that it wasn't. So then the question is, was this Touch Bar enough? And is it a transitional technology with the Touch ID, with new authentication features possibly coming, like facial recognition? So the issue becomes more interesting and more nuanced and more complex. Do Apple engineers put enough pressure on the software team to properly exploit the new hardware that they ship instead of leaving it to developers? Should Apple have continued to come out with exciting new MacBook Pros, even as they were working on the Touch ID? And so we didn't have a kind of a feeling of letdown. So what we got in 2016 in December was a Skylake processor and a limit of 16 gig RAM and this technology that didn't look like it was going to be, you know, a standout thing in a lot of people's minds. So our perception about the Touch ID was a little bit colored by the dark years. And then Chuck went on to talk about, and then a follow-on article about some feedback he got and perhaps how the Touch ID part of the Touch Bar is perhaps not enduring and will be replaced by something else, which is why when Apple came out with the Touch Bar, there was so much emphasis on the function strip itself and not so much emphasis on the Touch ID. So maybe that was an explanation for Apple's lack of emphasis.
You know, so I'm guessing.
These are all the things that Chuck described and I wanted to elaborate on. They were great.
All right. So on the point you were just mentioning, the Touch Bar getting more emphasis than the Touch ID feature, my guess is because you can visually wow people in a presentation with a Touch Bar as opposed to just showing someone putting their finger on the end of that strip.
Also, you can use your Apple Watch to unlock your Mac as well. So Chuck found himself using alternative, simpler technologies. Plus, he uses 1Password, and he talked about how that was a simplifying factor for him. So, well, I think the overall analysis is that the Touch Bar probably had too much emphasis internally at Apple as the next big thing, and they felt like this was going to be a sustaining technology factor. And when Apple finally came out with the 2016 MacBook Pro, the technical professionals kind of felt like Apple had the wrong emphasis.
Now, since I have a Touch Bar MacBook Pro, I consider myself in a position where I can talk about using its features in the real world. And I can tell you the Touch ID part, I use that so much every single day that I can't imagine having a Mac without Touch ID built in at this point. The Touch Bar itself, I would love to use it more than I do. The problem that I have encountered is that third-party apps that could integrate Touch Bar features haven't. So,
well, Chuck brought that up in one of his two articles. I forget which one, but the issue was the MacBook Pro is just a part of Apple's total Mac line. You've got the MacBooks, you've got the iMacs, you've got the old Mac Pro, you've got the coming Mac Pro. If you're a developer, And this touch bar is only a small fraction of Apple's total Mac lineup. How much effort are you going to put into supporting it?
Do you think that would change if Apple were to release that? Let's create a hypothetical situation here. The iMac Pro ships this fall, and we get a surprise. And that surprise is that the keyboard that it ships with is not the one they showed us at WWDC, but one that includes a touch bar. Do you think that Sure. would help?
Sure. Any incremental increase in the existence of the touch bar in the Mac lineup would create additional incentives for the developers. And since the iMac has a standalone keyboard and the Mac Pro has a standalone keyboard and the iMac Pro has one, you know, Apple coming out with a keyboard like that would be a very great incentive.
This is not the keyboard you're looking for.
Well, I think that's exactly what we're going to see when the iMac Pro ships.
Well, that'll be, we can even take that a step further because building on everything that John has just said, if we don't see Touch Bar and a standalone keyboard come out for the iMac Pro, we can be pretty sure that Apple is not going all in with it.
Yeah. I think that's a safe bet. And it's the touch bar for me is a nice addition and it's something that I use, but because of the way I have my desk set up, it's not something that I rely on all the time, every single day.
And plus, don't you run enclosed lid often?
No, it turns out that I actually can't run enclosed lid with the way I have my desk set up. It's a long story. Suffice it to say, my lid is open even though I can't see the screen.
Mm.
But I do have access to the touch bar, and more importantly for me, I have access to that Touch ID button.
The other thing that Chuck mentioned was that this is Touch Bar 1.0, and there could be technologies down the road. Apple's spending a lot of money in R&D. And it could be a gateway to something that evolves in the future, both on standalone keyboards and on the MacBooks that Apple isn't prepared to talk about. One of the things I mentioned in my article is that Apple tends to roll out advanced, sophisticated technologies in pieces. They test part of it, and we think, wow, that didn't get us excited. Then they roll out another piece that kind of fits in with it. They did this with Apple Pay in the wallet. And then finally, they roll out another piece, and it all comes together, and each piece has been tested and field certified. And then, wow, they have something that kind of catches everybody by surprise. So this could be just phase one.
It wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. And we are pretty much out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. But listeners, I'm curious what you think. Did I buy a Mac that's running a dead-end technology? Because I have the Touch Bar MacBook Pro. So what do you guys think about the Touch Bar? And it's okay if you tell me that I bought a computer that has technology that's actually lame. I won't cry too much. Anyhow, you can let me know what you think on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can send me emails, observations@macobserver.com. And you can also leave comments in today's show notes. I will look all those places to see what you have to say and to see if you're going to give me validation or shoot me down. I'm okay with either.
You know, I've got one other drag. I know we can't do it now, but maybe we can take it up in ACM tomorrow. I've got another direction on this.
Okay, well then, Brian, why don't we consider that a teaser for Wednesday's Apple Context Machine? Tune into that show and get a follow-up to today's discussion.
Sweet.
All right. And with that, we are so out of time. Brian, thank you for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having us, man. Good stuff.
Oh, yes. And John, thank you for being here as well.
Delighted to be here. Thanks for having me, too.
Ah, yes. Thanks, both of you, for being here. And thank you to Care.com for being our sponsor today. Head over to their website, care.com/TDO, and get 30% off a premium membership and take some of that burden of having to handle the in-home care for your loved ones and hand it off to someone that's a professional. So thank you, care.com. Listeners, thank you for being here. We will see everyone again tomorrow.